Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, 8 o'clock, first Sunday of the year, and Graphic Policy Radio is back on the air. This is Brett, and joining me is Alana and Ken. Welcome back.
Hey, everybody.
It's been quite a while. We took a nice little break during the holiday season. So first, just how are you both doing? How are things going?
Going pretty good. Very, very busy at the end of last year, but a lot of that's freed up, so I have time to do things again that are for fun and not just for work.
I had the plague for a little while, which meant that I had plenty of time to finally read all the back issues of X Factor I'd been missing, as well as a long run of the original the Devil miniseries, not miniseries, like the really long series, like Alan Grant and all that. I'll now forever associate reading those with Vicks VapoRub cream, a humidifier, massive boxes of tissues.
Oh, such a lovely image.
Thank you. I swear, I was like had ectoplasm coming out of my head. It was pretty nasty. Anyway.
All right. So tonight we've basically got two topics, and I'm sure both of these will last us a good while. So first up, we've got Best of 2011. And then I figured after that, we'll hop into the Marvel SOPA, well, really the SOPA debate in general. So I guess starting off with 2011 Best of. So I put out my list. I don't know if either of you read it.
Yeah, I read it.
I figured
walk us through it.
Yeah, just let's go down category by category. So I just kind of, so my criteria isn't necessarily what really is the best. It's what I read that I thought is the best.
Sure.
Which I think a lot of people seem to miss out on. Like I see a lot of complaining of like, well, you left this off the list, and it's like, yeah, I didn't read that. So sorry.
Right.
I only have so much money. So first up is Best Superhero Comic Series. Either of you have opinion.
Oh, I was waiting for you to say what you put.
Oh,
God. That's a popular answer. I'm going to have to start reading it. Like, I you know, again, I should say.
Well, I think the really good thing about it is, like, I mean, visually it's amazing, but also I think that particularly in contrast to things like Shadowland and earlier, more recent Daredevil stuff, it's fun. Whereas, you know, Daredevil's usually so dour and dark and,
yeah,
you know, almost Batman-like in a lot of his stories. This is fun Daredevil, and it's very good writing. I didn't put it quite number one, but it's up there.
I guess my number one would be split between the run on Uncanny, from Matt Fraction through Kieran Gillen, and death of my late great favorite, Secret Six. Those are my best from the year.
Yeah, Secret Six would definitely be up there. I'd have it in my top 10, I think, at least. Probably my top 5.
I mean, like I said, I have to admit, they actually did a good job of ending the series. But by the same token, I still feel like it's a huge loss to not have that in the DCU, because nothing that I'm reading now fills that niche at all.
So. Yeah, there's a massive gap as far as what's out today and what that series was. The other ones I kind of pointed out as pseudo runner-ups was, I thought Moon Knight is one of the solid series of the year, Uncanny X-Force, and Aquaman was the shocker that
series. You mean only since the revamp, though? You mean only since September, right?
Yeah, so we're talking four issues, but those four issues...
Well, I have to say, yeah, Moon Knight... I read one issue. I thought it was wonderful. I plan to pick it up in trade paperback. And with Uncanny X-Force, that's also been like, I hear it's amazing. So you've hit two of the books that I haven't read that I most intend to read.
Yeah, I actually put X-Force as number one. I mean, like, every issue is like a work of art visually. I mean, there's a bunch of good art out there right now, but it's hard to see anything that's, you know, as visually stunning as X-Force, and the storylines are very, very good, nuanced, and I mean, they could be a little daunting to people who aren't, you know, longtime readers, because they're very filled with the history of the X-Men, but it's, I mean, it's hard to, there's no other superhero comic that I read the second I get it other than X-Force, so that's really number one. There's a lot of good stuff, and I'll put up a top 10 later, and we'll talk about some of the other ones, but there's actually a lot of superhero comics I like this year, unlike, you know, some more previous years where it was a little more uneven, but I think there's a pretty good number of comics out there that are doing pretty good, I think.
Yeah, and so X-Force, the only reason I really didn't pick that as number one is because you really had to know history to do it, whereas Daredevil, anyone could kind of pick up and have fun and get right into it and just read it straight out. But that, to me, that was like the only knock on X-Force, is like you really had to know your X history to really appreciate it. And then Moon Knight, I think the series, like,
yeah,
it's reading.
I like know all that.
Yeah. So next up is best non-superhero comic, which is a pretty broad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I went with DMZ, but I'm in love with DMZ, and in general, like anything Brian Wood does, I dig.
There's only one non-superhero comic I read every month, and that's Walking Dead, and that's still one of the best comics there is as far as I'm concerned, so I put that up there.
Yep, I mean, that's on one of the runner-ups for me. I had American Vampire, Chew, and The Walking Dead.
Gonna come back to me on that one. I promise to give you an answer.
Yeah, it's one where like you really have to think of, but I mean, there's those four like solid series. So
you know, I read so little non-superheroes. It's terrible, but true. I don't know. Maybe Casanova. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, like Casanova, I put up there. Casanova is definitely a weird one. I feel like I need to do a lot of drugs while reading it.
I think the point of it is you don't have to. Like, you're supposed to read Casanova so you don't have to do drugs.
That's true. So after that, we have best limited series or one shot. For me, you know, it goes back to Brubaker and Phillips with The Criminal, The Last of the Innocent. I mean, any year they put out a Criminal volume, that's probably going to win or be up there for as like the best limited series.
I definitely want to read it. I haven't. I don't know. You know, I really enjoyed the Schism miniseries, but it's also such an obvious, like, this is a promo. This is part of a marketing device. Like, its existence is irksome, and yet the writers did a very good job. I enjoyed reading it a great deal, even though in concept it's like, I object to its existence. I know that's hard to say.
I like Schism, but at just the fact that they had this, like, it's like the last minute of like a Stallone or Schwarzenegger movie. There's like the Sentinels coming for like 3-4 hours while they get to put on this fight there. And it just like kept back. Oh, and he's still like this far away, but he's walking. And it seemed like that kind of ending, that part of it was a letdown. So, but I'd have to go with Flashpoint is probably the best one as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I think I put Flashpoint further down as best of events. I had it up there as event, but it wasn't the best event. The Flashpoint I really liked. My thing with Flashpoint was I liked it. I mean, I liked it a hell of a lot. I thought the ending was just kind of, there was something to the ending where it was like, okay, this really was just an excuse to revamp everything. Like, the conclusion I don't think was quite as satisfying. And Brightest Day I had the same issue with. Or Blackest Night I had the same issue with, where it like got to the ending and I was like, okay, the whole point of this was to bring back six characters.
Yeah.
it was good, though. Like, Flashpoint, I thought, was really, really good, especially for Event, because Events as a whole lately have been, to me, really underwhelming.
Well, and we talked about this one before. I really liked Fear itself up until the last issue. I mean, I liked the storyline more than I expected to, and I liked a lot of what was going on there, but the last issue just kind of killed it. But if I'd say probably the best Marvel event of the year was Spider Island. I know it wasn't technically a miniseries because it happened in the pages of Amazing, but it also had its spinoff series, and some of those were pretty good. But that's, I mean, to me, that was the biggest one from Marvel for sure. Another miniseries that I liked, it's not over yet, it's only about halfway through, is the new Alpha Flight revamp, which aside from the being pulled into Fear itself, where it kind of lost its some coherence, the rest of the series is really good, particularly if you are a previous fan of Off-White. It's a good bringing back of that storyline and really have the whole team together for the first time in decades. So
yeah, I really loved the premise of Spider Island, and I enjoyed the one that was just like about random New York City people that wasn't hero focused. I thought that was really wonderful. It's something I would have read if I had unlimited money, for sure. And hearing praise from you guys definitely was contributing to me wanting to do it. But I love stories where you have this sort of interesting premise that enables you to look at the world through a different lens. And that really was what that series did.
Yes, it was
a big what if.
Yeah, I mean, Spider Island was, I mean, I'm not a big Spider-Man person to begin with, so what I read I really liked, but it was one where I didn't read it, so I can't really judge it. And it kind of falls in that category. The other limited series I threw up there was Critical Millennium, which I've, like, talked and gushed about forever. Severed, which is Scott Snyder's, like, gothic horror thing where you can't quite tell if the dude's a vampire or what the hell the thing is. And 27 Second Set, which is about, I don't even know, it's a music base. It has to do with a musician who kind of like sells a soul to the devil. And the second part, the second set is him trying to make a comeback. It's really interesting. It's kind of out there.
And it's awesome. Was it called 27 because of the whole like everybody dying at 27 thing?
Exactly. Yeah.
Is it published wrong?
Image Comics published it. It's really, really good. The first set isn't what I expected. The first volume is like really kind of more like Sandman-ish, like really has to do with just odd concepts of like devils and stuff like that. And then the second set is just really focused on the musician himself and his comeback attempt. And it's there's a lot, like if you like music, there's a lot of small things in there. The whole second volume is all about one-hit wonders. So,
oh.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, like, small little shots about one-hit wonders. It's kind of awesome. Highly recommend it.
I'd also have to throw in the two the Stephen King adaptations being done by Marvel, the Dark Tower one and particularly The Stand, which is probably the best adaptation of The Stand that's ever been done beyond the original book. They're very, very well done, and I'd recommend that to anybody that even tangentially likes Stephen King. So,
how are the Stephen King books in general? Like we've mentioned it a bit. It's something I've never read. I mean, as a whole, I've never been a huge Stephen King fan, so it's not something I would normally really check out.
Yeah, I think the good thing about these is that they're open to people who haven't read the books before or don't really necessarily read Stephen King stuff. They do a really good job of like really kind of encapsulating it within itself. You'll really like them if you are a Stephen King fan. Particularly I think the Dark Tower stuff just looks amazing. It's some of the best art out there these days, but the Stand story is like one of my favorite stories of all time. So to see it done in a comic format and done very well. If you only have seen like the miniseries or something like this, this is better than that by far. So definitely check it out. If you have any interest whatsoever, you probably won't be disappointed. Of course, you're going to have to lay out a lot of money because it's like five or six miniseries back to back, but they're very well done.
That's good. We might have to go back and check that out. So the next category is a bit tougher. It's best single issue.
Oh, Jesus.
Definitely the toughest, I think, category out of everything. Mine for this year, I kind of split it between two issues because it really was a part one and part two. And Alan, I've talked to you about this one before on like an old radio show. To me, it's and this is going to sound really goofy and everyone's going to laugh, is Transformers issue 22 and 23. And exactly. The reason why is it's big giant robots, which is the first thing, which kind of makes the bar a little bit lower. But this, like, is even some of the best writing just general all year was the reason that I like this was, not to give the total away of the story, is Megatron's basically surrendered. And the two issues is just Optimus and him kind of sitting down and debating between the two of them about politics. and what, and the whole thing's an examination of like what makes a person a freedom fighter and what makes a person a terrorist. And that's it for two issues. That's really the focus of it. And to me, the big part of it was that it came out of nowhere, but two, it was really, really heavy, and it was believable. Like, it actually gave really good motivation for both of them. Like, Optimus was a cop that gets dragged down into the corruption of the politics in the Senate, whereas Megatron was, like, a lowly worker who kind of didn't like his role, got the crap beat out of him, and went from being a peaceful activist to a radical. And, I mean, that's the short version of it, but, like, pretty impressive and deep stuff for, you know, a comic about giant talking robots.
There are two that kind of jump out, like, on the top of my head, and there's probably others that I could add because I haven't gone back and looked thoroughly, but the first one I'd say is Wolverine and the X-Men number one, between the art and the just amazingly fun story that's in there, and there's just so many...
That's this year, though, no?
Yeah, that counts as this year.
Yeah, I've seen it on a couple of the year-end lists. They put it on there. So, I mean, they're up to issue 3 or 4 right now. So, And then going back early in the year, Walking Dead number 83. It's the one where they're living in this new town, and I don't want to give a spoiler, but someone important that you didn't expect gets shot. Yeah. It's just like it was hard to imagine that the series could still be that shocking, and it was a very action-packed issue with a shocking ending that you just can't believe happened. There were people that stopped reading the comic because the ending was so shocking. If you read the letters page, people are just like outraged at how far they were willing to go in this issue, and they did. So it's there's a visual image there that's really hard to get out of your mind on the last page of that issue. So
yeah, it's a good call. That's a really good call. I'd also throw, thinking of shocking moments, if you want to add a whole new category, is the end of Pigs number one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was, yeah.
Which could be up there as like one of the best single issues. Really good issue.
There's some pretty shocking stuff in Animal Man number one, too. That one really jumped out at me.
Yeah, I mean, that was Animal Man as a whole, like Animal Man and Swamp Thing, I think have been two of my favorite of the relaunch of DC. Just really good comics, solid story
art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The art just really sells it, especially Swamp Thing's art. I like it more than, I mean, I think the art is just really fantastic, some of the best stuff around. Is that the next category? Are we
the most original art going.
In terms of, like, it's like I don't know the answer to my best issue. Like, that's just, you're asking me to, like, I can't do it. Sorry. but best art, I mean, obviously the answer is going to be Batwoman. But the best art other than Batwoman, I think, is a more accurate category, and that might be Swamp Thing.
Yeah, Swamp Thing would be definitely be up there. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. Is I never go with art because I think art is so to the individual's taste. That I always feel weird going about, like, you know, here's my favorite art. But, yeah, I mean, Batwoman's absolutely up there.
Just the way the pages are broken out, the layouts are just remarkable. The way type is used, not like the bubbles, but the way they use type within the panels and in the designs, and just is beautiful. And the facial characterizations is amazing. And, I mean, I'm a sucker for Art Nouveau, and he certainly has very strong references to the style in his comic. I just think Batwoman is always as gorgeous.
And to me, I mean, Batwoman, like, forget just the art style, like the painting of it and the way it looks is amazing. The layouts alone almost makes it win, like, best art of the year. It does things with pages that you don't see anywhere else.
I was going to say the color really stands out to me. I can instantly think of panels just because of the coloration that you don't really notice in a lot of other comics. So
that's totally true. Totally true. And I certainly say to people, like, if I'm going to want to just, if I'm at a comic book store with like a friend who doesn't read comics and I just want to be like, here, look at the pretty thing. Like, I give them Batwoman. Like, here, see pretty. Yay. Beautiful stuff. Okay. Like, you could just be appreciated on its own outside of narrative. It's just like beautiful art.
I would also, as far as art, I would throw in, obviously we mentioned Animal Man and Swamp Thing, but I'd also throw in I, Vampire looks really good to me. Amazing Spider-Man, I think, is really consistently high quality. Wolverine and the X-Men, and I'd throw in Dark Tower stuff.
What about, so you're a big Spider-Man man. What about the Astonishing Spider-Man series? I think there's only been two issues, but if you've read it yet.
It's basically a kind of a somewhat of a revival of Marvel Team Up, but with a so far a consistent cast like Red Hulk, and it's not. I mean, it's well written, but it's Amazing Spider-Man is one of the best things Marvel's doing. Dan Slott's really one of the best writers they have, and he consistently writes well. Every issue is well written, even if the plot isn't particularly great. The details and the story going through it are all pretty amazing. So, and of course,
what's Astonishing Spider-Man versus Amazing Spider-Man? Like, what's the?
Yeah, Astonishing just launched off. It's basically, I think, it's at two issues. I don't think the third's out yet. It's basically Spider-Man team-up is what it really comes down to.
Okay.
I can't think of who's writing it, but the art is Madura. So it's like a really kind of exaggerated style. I mean, if you like his style, which I do, it's great to see it, but... I mean, I haven't laughed that hard in a reading a comic a long time. There's something that was really entertaining about it. And I'm not a big Spider-Man fan, and I walked away like I liked the series.
Zeb Wells is writing it?
Yeah, that's it. Zeb Wells. So really,
yeah,
really solid stuff.
Very similar art to what's going on in Amazing Spider-Man. Let me see who. But, I would say I can't forget, of course, Uncanny X-Force in terms of art as well. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So here's the fun one to pan. Worst single thing of the year, or issue of the year, comic of the year, whatever.
Oh,
so
worst single issue or thing that happened.
Well, I kind of
know the
comics.
Worst thing that happened is what happened to ladies in the DC relaunch.
So I didn't go with event. I just went with Holy Terror and any issue of The Infinite.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a safe bet. Or what about Hawk and Dove?
Hawk and Dove, I only read the one issue, and it was bad.
True.
And I put it down, and it was one... I don't think Hawk and Dove was nearly as bad as The Infinite. Like, that first issue is still better than The Infinite.
Actually, no, here's a question, though, right? So it's easy to say, you know, I would say, okay, what's the best art other than Batwoman? What's the worst thing other than stuff that has something to do with Rob Liefeld? I think that's a more challenging question, really.
Holy, Holy Terror, right at the top of that list. And this another one I would say, and a lot of people seem to disagree with me on this, but I hate Deadpool Max. I think it is one of the most offensive and unimaginative and unoriginal things I've ever seen. Sometimes the art is okay, but the writing to me is just atrocious, and I hate it with a passion. And it's ended up on people's top 10 list, but I'm baffled by that.
Deadpool, I've totally dropped. I've given up on Deadpool. I was reading the main series, and I got to a point I was like, there is no point to this whatsoever. It's inconsistent as far as tone, as far as humor, whether or not it wants to be a humorous action comic or an action comic with humor. Like, it was just all over the place. It's just editorially, and that was one of the few Marvel comics I just dropped this year and said, forget it. I'm kind of done with Deadpool at this point.
Yeah, he's even got his own syndrome, like the Deadpool syndrome.
Yeah, definitely one of the most overused characters of the year.
Yeah.
It's almost like they tried to do kind of like a Freddy Got Fingered or Andy Kaufman kind of like do something so bad, overexpose him so much that, you know, everybody hates it, but it's done on purpose as kind of a performance art type of thing. Hopefully, otherwise they're just stupid. So
I'm going with they're just stupid part.
It's a shame, right? I mean, I actually like Deadpool, a character. I consider myself a fan of Deadpool, but I have absolutely no desire to read any of that shit right now.
Yeah.
He's used well on Uncanny X-Force. Of course, it's not mainly about him, but he's used well there.
Yes, absolutely. That's absolutely. Uncanny X-Force is the best version of him, where he's so stupid and crazy. He's smart and has just, like, those really good quips. Yeah, I mean, that's the best version out of anything that's being done with him.
Mm.
So on to next is best graphic novel or trade paperback. And my pick is Green River Killer for the best graphic novel.
Oh. My pick is Eulogy. This is the Batwoman trade paperback.
Yeah.
I can tell you what my best graphic novel will be when I read it, and I haven't yet, is the new Kim Deitch book, Looking for Smiling Sam. The problem is that I've loaned it to somebody, and so until I read it, I can't officially say it's the best graphic novel of the year, but I'm sure that it will be.
That one, I don't know. I don't know anything about that one.
He's, like, pretty much the only indie person I read. I mean, you've probably noticed that about me. Kim Deitch is is like an underground comic book artist from the 60s who still does really interesting, creative, better, I think, now than he was in the 60s work, actually. He deals a lot with comic book history and animation history. I mean, really with more focus on animation history, actually, throughout his work. And his art is really beautiful, and he has a very strong sense of just history and also how, like, the workplace sort of, like, breaks people. You would really enjoy it. I'd have to get you to read the stuff.
I got to the point where you said workplace breaks people. That's where I perked up and, like, okay.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, well, and the artwork, of course, is, like, all very much in the style of the early cartoons, the early animated cartoons. So if you haven't read anything by him, pick up Boulevard of Broken Dreams graphic novel. That would be the place to start. So I'm sure that his new one will be the best of the year as soon as I get it back from my friend Mike.
Huh.
Bastard.
I will. That's a good one. You're gonna remind me after this, so I can go and really check that out.
I don't think I read any original graphic novels that were published this year. I read collections and stuff and a few things from a few years ago, but nothing new this year. So I can't really say the best of the year.
Interesting. All right, so after that, best event of the year, there was a lot of events to choose from. I went with the Uncanny X-Force Dark Angel saga.
Which was pretty amazing, yeah.
And I kind of count that as an event. I mean, that was, what, 6 or 7 months, if you don't want to count it from issue one. And was one of those things where it was like, what the hell is Rick Remender is going to pull, out and throw into the series. Like, it really kept you on your toes. You had no idea what the hell was going to go on. I thought it was really good, like ridiculously good. And then the other ones up there were Artifacts and Flashpoint, which was really interesting. And that Artifacts, which was the Top Cow big event, actually wound up having a very similar ending to Flashpoint.
Yeah, and I throw Spider Island in there. Yeah. Spider Island, Flashpoint, and the X-Force one were definitely the ones that I liked the most.
I don't know. I guess I would have to stick with Schism for me. I didn't really like Fear Itself. I didn't read enough Spider Island to really say that I thought it was that great. DC's kind of, like, individual DC, there are individual DC comics that are really excellent, but DC as a whole is a mess, so I'm not going to give them props on any of that. That's pretty much all I can say.
All right. I kind of like this one. Is best genre of the year. So it can be horror. You can break it down even further than horror, than, like, zombie, steampunk, superhero.
I got an answer for this.
All right.
This is the year for fantasy. I was not a huge fan of the comic book versions of the Game of Thrones, but, many people are. But I'd say that fantasy is the genre of the year because of how wonderful Journey into Mystery has been. I mean, really wonderful. And then now one of the really good titles that's come out of the DC relaunch is Demon Knights, which is another fantasy title. And I'm seeing more within that genre cropping up when I'm in stores as well. So, that's fine.
Ken, thought on your part?
I mean, CrossGen got bought, right? And that's supposed to be a fantasy.
I threw it as horror. To me, horror was the big one. The reason being, and maybe it's just what I was reading, but you had, like, of course, all the zombie stuff that was going, which kind of started petering off. But then you had, like, Severed, Animal Man, Swamp Thing, Eye Vampire, a lot of dark crazy horror comics is what it comes down to. BPRD. I thought I had like a really strong surgence this year. And then steampunk, I think, is still kind of under the radar, and sooner or later it's going to break big. I still pick that that's going to pick up at some point, become like the next big thing that Hollywood and entertainment's going to kill as far as genres.
Oh, but they have. They have. Those Sherlock Holmes, crappy Sherlock Holmes movies are completely steampunk. They're just crappy.
Yeah, but they're like, you have Sherlock Holmes, but there's not 26 different movies that all have the same genre. Like vampire movies, there was a hell of a lot of them all coming out at the same time. Or just vampire themes, or zombie. Zombie absolutely got killed by mass media. But steampunk like rarely, like there's one or two movies that'll come out, and then, but you don't see a hell of a lot of it. Like Sucker Punch, which I think came out this year, was, you
oh,
can
yeah,
argue
that's
and say,
it, yeah.
Yeah, you could say that was steampunk. And then you had Sherlock Holmes, which definitely had some elements to it. But other than that, I can't think of anything. So it hasn't been done to death quite yet. And there definitely hasn't quite been, when it comes to movies, quality.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, all the best movies of that genre have pretty much been made by, my brain is falling out of my ear right now, Terry Gilliam. And, you know, he hasn't had a movie out for 2 years maybe, so we're all waiting for the next.
Kenneth, what do you think?
I was kind of going to go with kind of a variation on Brett's, but with kind of like DC comics with like horror elements in them. So like the ones you mentioned, but I would also throw in like Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. I've liked a whole bunch. And I'd say there's even some kind of those horrific elements in All-Star Western as well. Kind of the old style gothic horror, whatever that they've done in that series, and kind of tie that in with Animal Man and Swamp Thing, and even Justice League Dark's been entertaining. I, Vampire is one of my favorites. So that kind of, all of that stuff kind of come together to me has been pretty good. They're all pretty high quality. So
the interesting on that is, like, as a whole, what I'll kind of dub the Vertigo relaunch titles. So, you know, Animal Man, Swamp Thing, Wonder Woman, like all that stuff that had really relies on the Virgo vibe has been high quality when it comes to DC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and you know what? Wonder Woman is totally a fantasy book, too, so I still stick by my projection.
All right.
In the title. I think all of the Batman-related titles at DC have all been pretty high quality.
Yeah. As a family of titles, I think the Bat stuff is, like, the most solid out of them all.
Really? I feel like the new Batman is okay, it's not great, and the new Detective Comics is okay, it's not great, and Nightwing is unreadable. I don't know. Batgirl's okay, but it's not what we all know she's
right.
doing.
I mean, although
I don't know.
Unless you count, like, Animal Man and Swamp Thing kind of as a grouping, but, like, compared to the Superman books. Yeah, well, I mean, like, I'm more thinking of, okay, there's clearly Superman books, Batman books, Green Lantern books. I guess there's really the three of them. Like, out of those
four.
Three, I thought... What else?
I think there's four of them, I think.
What would be the four?
Red Lanterns, right? New Guardians.
Yeah.
Green Lantern, and one more.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, to me, out of all that, I'd put Batman as probably one of the more solid up there. As a whole, I mean, we'll get to it because I think I have it under like my one of my biggest disappointments is the DC shakeup. This is an interesting one because you can kind of have a lot of fun with it. Best comic tie-in of the year. So it can be like video game, toys, a T-shirt, a movie, like anything.
Oh, well, X-Men First Class.
All
right. Yeah, I was going to say that or maybe... Thor was really good.
Mine was Batman Arkham City, the video game, which a lot of people had on their best of lists, period, as far as video games. So it was up there. And then the other ones, Marvel Universe Toys, which somehow has got me back to actually enjoying hunting toys in toy stores. And then the one I've become absolutely obsessed with is the DC Legos. which, yeah, just leave it at that. This one should be good. Best comic-related movie. And there was, so to me as a whole for the year, the quality of the movies, there was no, like, Dark Knight. There was a lot of good, and then there was a lot of crap. Like a definitive line. And to me, like, the good ones were Thor, Captain America, X-Men. I haven't seen Tintin, so I can't make a comment on that. But that was the good, and then the rest kind of fell into crap.
Yeah.
I didn't think Green Lantern was as bad as everybody else did. I didn't think it was high art or anything, but I thought it was watchable.
Green Lantern I would put as the best of the rest.
I couldn't take it seriously enough to even watch it. The ads made me irritated. I'm just like, oh, why are you – you're a comic actor. Ah! And I just really couldn't bring myself to do it. It looked too stupid. I'm sorry.
But on that note, it looks like 2012 could be like the year of movies. I keep on making a crack was if the Mayans are right and the world really is going to end, we're at least going out on a high note when it comes to movies.
Well, actually, you know what I should have said the best tie-in is? Did folks watch the Avengers cartoon? Because that was really good.
I'm going to have to check that out. I keep on missing all the cartoons.
We really enjoyed the Avengers cartoon. I don't know what happened to it. Like, it's missing. I don't know, like, is there another season, and somehow it didn't get taped on our DVR? Like, I don't know. I really enjoyed it, and it's not been around.
Completely slipped my mind, but of course, the Walking Dead TV show.
Yes.
Which I think is fabulous. So.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the Walking Dead TV show actually might be better than most of the movies that were put out.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
And what's interesting, I don't know if you guys have seen it, as far as converting people from non-comic fans to willing to check out comics or are checking out comics, like, The Walking Dead is, I think, the best example of that out of everything. Like, after Thor came out, I didn't see people reading Thor trade paperbacks or X-Men or Captain America. Walking Dead, I consistently see people reading Walking Dead trade paperbacks.
That's wonderful.
Like, the trains. Yeah, it's fantastic. And my friends come and ask me all the time of, like, you know, do you have books that I can borrow to read and where should I start and all that? So when it comes to getting people interested, like, Kirkman's done very well for the industry, I think, as a whole. And talking to the various stores, I know they move a hell of a lot of those trade paperbacks. So I have to throw mad props for them. I probably should give them way more credit than I did on the year-end list, but that's what they get for being on hiatus. best surprise of the year? I said the DC 52 is the best surprise in that I thought the revamp was going to totally suck. But it got me to buy, and now I'm buying more DC comics than I ever have and care about more DC comics than I ever have. But at the same time, it falls into disappointment because it didn't go far enough in the offering things that non-adolescent males will enjoy. Their advertising they did in the beginning and then seemed to have dropped off. There's no sustained campaign. And even though they've made gains, Marvel's back to being number one in the market. So they got like 2 or 3 months, and that was it.
Which is kind of what we predicted, right?
Yeah, we predicted it. I think we made the crack was like, is it going to be by the end of the year or is it January or February? But I think we are all actually pretty damn on as far as what we thought Marvel would become number one.
Totally.
So in terms of positive surprise, I can think of like a couple of things. Like I've never been a Wonder Woman fan, and that first issue of that new series to me was one of the best of the number ones that they had, which was very surprising. Totally surprised that I like Frankenstein, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. When I first saw the first solicitation for that, I was like, that looks really dumb, and it's one of my favorite ones of the entire relaunch. So I think those two, and the high quality of the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series surprised me as well. I'm liking that a lot. So,
yeah, the new TMNT I thought is really good too. It's been one that I've always liked the series, and I find like each, depending on the versions, it's kind of hit and miss. But I kind of like this one, which kind of harks back to the grittier version of it.
Yeah,
which I like. like the first version of it, where it was much more adult than the kid stuff. And there's a lot that plays off of that, which is great.
But shouldn't Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles be kid stuff?
It's not. When it first came out, it wasn't. It was like a pretty
dark
adult thing, like really good for teenagers and young adults. It wasn't a kiddie, you know, they're fighting a dude that looks like a pig and a brain and a android. And it was more of like them going out and kicking ass of gangs and stuff like that. Like, it was pretty dark stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty violent. There's some pretty, I mean, there's regularly people dying in there, and the turtles are killing people that they're fighting frequently. So it's darker when it's the darker version, but they, you know, with the TV show, they made it much more kid like even in the comics, but it's good that they've gone back away from that.
I didn't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. I've always liked the old stuff. So and Image had like a series that kind of harked back to that for a while too, and that kind of just went AWOL. Biggest disappointment of the year.
The revamp, I mean, it should have done so many more things, and it had so many predictable mistakes that any Tom, Dick, or Harry could have, or especially Jane, could have warned them about in advance. And they just blundered into stupid stuff, you know? Like, there was so much potential there that they totally messed up in a great deal of ways.
Yeah, I think that has to be kind of the obvious answer. To give a more specific answer, I'd say Mr. Terrific, because I really was looking forward to that series. I liked the character when I saw it before, but I've stopped reading it because it's just not any good. So,
yeah, Mr. Terrific did not live up to its name. It was far from terrific.
No, agreed.
So the great PW Comics World on Twitter decided to, I posted up like, Holy Terror makes all of our worst of lists. And Publishers Weekly's response was, Holy Terror makes all worst of lists.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So biggest disappointment for me was Marvel Events.
Yeah.
Fear itself I thought was so disappointing. Schism I thought it was good, but there was something that was off to me. It wasn't the best of X events that we've seen in the past. I actually thought like Messiah War and Messiah Complex was even better. Shadowland was like uneven. I guess Spider Island would have been the only uptick, but I didn't read it, so. Best character? Individual character. Or I could throw in teams, but I was thinking of one character.
Think for a second. There's so many to dig through to get there.
No, that's a heavy question. It's like,
say,
who really broke my heart and shredded my brain this year, you know?
There's a couple that jump out at me from each of the two big two. I'd say in DC, Father Time as a little girl in Frankenstein, Agent of Shade is really kind of cool. And most of the supporting characters in that are actually really good too. And I've kind of been really intrigued by the Supergirl character in that series. You know, she's kind of doesn't really know what's happening, and she's really kind of a unique female character in a lot of what I've been reading, in that there's no real stereotypes associated with her, because they're portraying her as an alien, of course, and so but an alien that doesn't remember anything that's happened and is kind of learning the world. And, you know, in the middle of like these massive battles and everything like that. So that really jumped out at me. And then Phantom X over in X-Force, who's, you know, before that series had been just kind of like this, like, oh, well, this is just like a, you know, kind of a Deadpool ripoff. But they've really kind of developed in there since he's alongside Deadpool. And he's really kind of jumped high up on my list in terms of characters I like. And then Slot Spider-Man is just amazing. So it's hard to, and no pun intended there, obviously, but he's writing them better than he's been written in years, I think. So,
yeah, Supergirl, I actually have to give mad props to. That was a series that I didn't expect much from it, but the way they're writing her as an alien, like, what would an alien actually react to coming to Earth, not knowing the language, not really knowing what the hell's going on. It's a great perspective, and I think they're actually knocking that book out of the park. Like, it's pretty impressive.
Wow, this is a hard question. I mean, I'm going to have to definitely give some shout-outs to the – actually, don't even know how to pronounce his name, but Sir Yston from Demon Knights, who might end up being the first major trans character in a superhero book, or I guess you could consider it, it's more of a fantasy book, but whatever. If in fact, you know, Paul Cornell sticks to where I think he's going with this, we actually have ourselves a really unique but awesome character. You know, initially the character was created by Grant Morrison during Seven Soldiers of Victory limited series, which I was a huge fan of. And having the character, you know, could be trans is consistent with that story, and I hope that that will continue in that way. And also just had a wonderful pathos. And, oh, you know what? I don't know if this past issue might count as 2012, really, but wonderful issue in the last issue of Demon Knights. And, you know, this has been a great year for so many of the core X-Men characters. They've had, I think, has been wonderful. Emma and Kitty Pryde, I mean, this has been, you know, they're people we all know and love anyway, but I think they've been handled very well. And I'm trying to think of, you know, I'm a huge fan among the new, of the lights in Generation Hope. Huge fan of a lot of those characters, but especially of Kenji, who is the Japanese character who is an artist, and it's really unique. I hope folks who will give the book a read if they haven't had a chance yet. I think the trade paperback might have just come out. And actually, since we should talk about specifically like a character who's gotten new in the breakaway in this past year, oh my God, the idea totally fell out my ear, and I just had, well, I was trying to talk about Generation. Oh, right, Loki. Kid Loki.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think this is the year of Kid Loki.
Yeah, I'd throw a really good one on that. Yeah, that's a good call.
I'd say, you know, kind of falling into both those categories, too, is the core student group in Avengers Academy. There, you know, five like really different characters, and they've played them all very, very well. You know, it's one that I've seen pop up on a couple of lists because it is doing stuff that you don't expect from Avengers comics at all. And if you read the other Avengers comics, there's really not a lot of crossover in terms of tone or what they're trying to do or anything like that. It's really drastically different, and it's really well done. There's like the massive cast of FF with like all the different the Moloids and some of the ex-mutants and the children and, you know, the actual members of the group. That stuff is, Hickman's doing a really good job with that stuff, and I think a lot more people should be reading that.
The final category is Best Publisher of the Year.
Wow.
If I read enough
I'm gonna
of
have
the...
to say Marvel. I haven't wanted to hit them all year.
Yeah, but you know, Fear itself was such a disappointment, and that was kind of their flagship of the year, and it took over like all their other series for months at a time, and that kind of really dragged down a lot of good work, like stuff that should have survived. They might have killed stuff like Heroes for Hire. I wonder if them being pulled into Fear itself caused that series to die off. So that bothers me. I wish I knew more of the stuff from the smaller publishers, because it would probably have to be one of those. It's certainly not DC, and Marvel had enough major problems that I feel uncomfortable giving it to them, even though I like a lot more of their stuff than DC, but I don't know.
Well, to finish off, so my pick is it's Archaea, and I actually picked Archaea last year as well. Out of every publisher, and this is not an exaggeration, only one book I didn't like of theirs. Everything they've put out, I've either liked or loved. They're really heavily more in graphic novels. They don't do too many series, but their stuff's like beyond high quality. And presentation is also what's in between the books and in between the covers. But to me, like, they're class. Like, everything about the company says class. So I have to throw mad props to them. And that kind of wraps up the year. Is there anything, like, any other points you want to make or things you want to highlight and spotlight of the year?
No.
I'd say I really wish they hadn't killed off Secret Warriors. I was really loving that book, but
yeah, actually, some of the most disappointing things of the year: Secret Warriors ending, DMZ ending, and Secret Six ending. All three of those just killed me because those are three amazing books.
Yeah, yeah. There's still a six-shaped heart in my chest right now.
I'd also throw in a little shout-out for Thunderbolts. Thunderbolts is doing really well. I mean, the writing is really kind of entertaining, and they're trying different things there each issue. So I'd say that's another one I'd recommend to people.
Yeah, Thunderbolts I kind of split on. It's one where I think like some of the writing's really good. I'm not a big fan of the time travel part of it. But I like the team, like the interaction of everyone, if that makes sense. I just don't like the setting they're in.
Sure.
But yeah, that's definitely a personal thing. So I guess, is that it for our 2011 wrap up?
I think so.
On to the political stuff and hammering some publishers.
Yeah.
All right. So up is SOPA. SOPA. That's a great name of legislation. So for the audience who doesn't know what SOPA is, so there's two pieces of legislation that are up. The Stop Online Piracy Act, SOPA, is in the House and is currently being debated and in the markup phase in the House Judiciary Committee. And then there's the Protect IP Act, otherwise known as PIPA, in the Senate, which may or may not be getting a vote in late January. What the legislation is, rewrites the copyright law of the United States in a way that it kind of gets rid of the DMCA, even though they claim it doesn't. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act. What the Digital Millennium Copyright Act did was create the framework that we all now work under in as far as online interaction, in that if a copyright holder has an issue with something from like YouTube or some other site that gets posted, they send a letter that says you need to take this down, and then the person's notified, and the person then can argue whether or not it is a violation of copyright. But that's pretty much the world that we live in currently. Also a part of that is that the website itself is not liable for what their idiot commenters or posters do. So Facebook, YouTube, Twitter isn't responsible for the videos you put up or the links you put. Well, SOPA, one, gets rid of that. So now Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Tumblr, WordPress, all those sites are now on the line. The second part of it is it takes it a step further. It's not just you posting up, just linking to pirated material can get you thrown in jail or fined. And it leaves it up to the copyright holder as to what they want to do. So for instance, Justin Bieber, who became famous for copying other people's works and playing it on YouTube, could technically go to jail now for having done that exact same thing. And for people that want to laugh on that, Prince has a habit of suing people for just having his music in the background of videos. There's been a long-going battle between him and a mother who decided to film her child dancing to music that had Prince in the background, and that's been going on for a few years. So artists can't really be trusted as is. I don't think we give them any more. Also part of it is it's not just a takedown notice. The copyright holder can get a court order to seize the entire damn website. And when I say seize, I mean shut it all down. So it is blocked at the DNS level, so you can't access it. So there is literally a blacklist that's going to be created by this piece of legislation. So along with Thwipster, which is a fantastic website where you can get some cool items fairly cheaply, Graphic Policy has launched Dear Marvel, where people can go and petition Marvel, which is one of the supporters of SOPA, to rethink their position. I'm under no delusions that Marvel will change their position, but maybe they will rethink it a little bit. For those that will say that there's no chance of that ever happening, GoDaddy had pressure pointed on them for that sort of activity, and they decided to not just pull their support of SOPA, but completely denounce it outright after like a week of really bad press and losing, I think, about $750,000 worth of business.
That GoDaddy is a conservative company, so people were successfully able to lobby a conservative company into changing their stance on this.
Yes. What makes it trickier with Marvel is Marvel's owned by Disney, and for people that don't know, is Disney has literally written the copyright law in the United States. When it comes to the, oh, it's like 75 years and characters wind up in not being protected under copyright, Disney's always the one that kind of goes under the radar and gets new legislation to extend all that crap. So part of it is I can't totally blame Marvel because they're part of Disney, and I'm sure that's where it's coming from. Disney also lists out a good chunk of their subsidiaries, so like ESPN's on there, ABC's on there, basically all their different subsidiaries are listed. What's interesting is a lot of people brought up and said, why aren't we hitting DC? While Time Warner is listed, DC is not listed separately, and there are various divisions of Time Warner that are listed. So either DC is not important enough for Time Warner to list it separately, or they purposely did not list it. So it's one where I didn't want to hit them without getting an actual statement from them. As far as statements from publishers, we've got one that said that they have no comment or no interest in it, in the legislation, which was Arkea. Fantagraphics has actually been posting up anti-SOFA tweets as retweets. I hit them up, and as we were on the show, I've been tweeting back and forth with them, and said, do you support it? And said, correct, we don't support it. We're not taking an activist position, but we appreciate the sentiment of the original tweet, which was someone was said, don't support Marvel, go to indies like Fantagraphics. And I said, so are you taking like an actual anti-SOFA stance? And they said, to be clear, we're not fans of online piracy. We're not taking a specific anti-SOFA stand at the moment. And it's a company spokesman speaking extemporaneously.
Can I just speak real quickly as a former employee of an entertainment industry union? You can be against piracy and be against this bill. This bill is so freaking stupid, it would make the internet incapable of functioning.
Yes.
So even if you are like really hardcore about protecting intellectual property, this is not that. This is insane. This will make the internet not work anymore. This is terrible for the economy. This is what happens when you have legislation written by lobbyists who have no understanding of how actual industries work. Like it. Outside of their immediate narrow interest, this would be terrible for the tech industry, and it's terrible for individual artists. This is like when when we had Ted Stevenson talking about the internet being a series of tubes. This bill is like for people who have the same limited understanding of how the internet works. It's totally written by them.
And that was part of the thing. Like I was watching the hearings, and they kept on saying quite a few of them was like, I don't know all technology, totally understand technology. And my only thought is, why the hell are you pushing this legislation so hard if you don't get it?
Thank you. This is why I'm going to just remind people about Darcy Berner being a former Microsoft employee, software guru, running for Congress. Like, she had a great email that went out to her list not that long ago saying, wouldn't it be nice if there was someone in Congress who actually did understand how these things worked?
And there's been a decent coalition of a few Republicans and Democrats who've gotten together that get technology that all realize of how crap this legislation is. But it was an interesting thing where I've been trying to get creators, publishers, and other blogs to come out and just slam the legislation, and a lot of the creators are very nervous from speaking out, partially because they don't want to piss off the publishers, but also a lot of them are like, well, you know, I don't want to be seen as pro-piracy. And I think that argument's just idiotic. It's the talk of the other side making it, saying if you're against SOPA, you're pro-piracy, and it's just not true. Ed Brubaker made a statement where he said he hates – his exact quote is, I oppose the bad parts. I also oppose digital piracy. So there you have it. So I put him in the in the opposed category.
Exactly. The thing I would say is like, okay, people were on this show, we were talking about how great X-Force was, right? But that you really needed to have a deep understanding of Marvel history to read it. Well, when I'm reading a comic and I don't know something that happened in the past, you know where I go to find out? I look it up on Wikipedia. If I don't have Wikipedia to look up as a historic reference of information like that, then how the heck am I supposed to read these arcane books, right? This legislation would totally make Wikipedia go down.
Yeah, actually, Wikipedia is a perfect example because that's all copyrighted material. So Yeah, I mean, it makes Wikipedia go down. I mean, just the fact that I face jail time and fines for linking to Wikipedia is so absurd that, like, that unto itself should make this legislation thrown out. Like, I, as a user of the internet, should not be responsible for having to know copyright law and what is and what isn't copyright. You know, like, that's ridiculous.
This website's responsible for what individual people post on it when they don't moderate everything that gets put up there. It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, that alone.
The internet doesn't work that way.
No, I mean, YouTube does a fantastic job when it comes to DMCA. I mean, as much as I might not be the biggest fan of DMCA, it's working somewhat. At least, like, you put in a complaint, they take it down. This breaks everything. Like, to say it breaks the internet is not an exaggeration. 83 basically creators of the internet have come out and said this is some of the worst legislation they've ever seen and oppose it. Yeah, it's so, so bad. Yeah. So folks, if they want to, you can go to dearmarvel.com and it's us and Thwipster, put it together. You put in your thoughts and sign the petition. A massive amount of the people said that they will not buy Marvel Comics anymore because of it. Who knows how much they're actually doing that, but there's like a big talk of boycott. And I throw it out there is, I'm going to be blunt on this, other people in the industry, get some balls and speak out about this. Like, the fact that y'all are so many people are gutless and aren't willing to call this legislation out for the shit legislation that it is, it disturbs me. Like, all these people talk about free speech. This legislation kills free speech. Like, if you really believe in free speech, you need to hate this legislation. And that's my soapbox.
What are the big nonprofits organizations who are fighting against SOPA right now? Is Free Press one of the folks involved, or Electronic Frontier Foundation, or who are the good groups to talk with on this?
Yeah, so Free Press absolutely is an organization that is talking against it. Electronic Frontier Foundation is coming against it. And actually the first organization, and I'm going to toot my own horn here and sound like I'm bragging, is I work with an organization called the Entertainment Consumers Association, which backs video game consumers. And we've actually been fighting it since it was PIPA. So since the summer and when it was announced, we recognized how crap this legislation was. And there's been some comments where people are making comments like, we're not hearing from any constituents other than the ECA, which kind of blows my mind. And we've had congressional officers reach out to us and try to explain why this legislation was really bad, which we've, of course, done. So any of those three has got tons of stuff to do. There's, you know, to just list off some of the names of, like, the tech giants that are fighting this, is it's everything from Firefox to Google, Yahoo, AOL, Facebook, Twitter, like, all the actual major tech giants themselves all are opposed to this legislation.
So basically the future is against this legislation and the past is for it. Got it.
Yes, yes. That's actually the best way of putting it. And there is actually talk of a nuclear option. If the legislation looks like it's going to get voted on or possibly pass, Google, Yahoo, Wikipedia, and a few others have talked about taking down their sites for the day and having nothing except a explanation of what the legislation is and tools for people to write in and call into elected officials, which, having worked on the Hill, is going to bring down Capitol Hill. They will not be able to handle the volume that will come in at that point in time. And for tech giants to be willing to shut down their entire income for a day should tell you how crap this legislation is. Part of me wants to see that.
That's fantastic.
I think it'd be awesome to see. That's where it stands out. I mean, right now, the people that are against that are actually speaking up is ourselves. Other blogs, including Comic Book Bin, Comic Attack, Cosmic Book News, Why Not Indie, Comics the Blog, and Big Shiny Robot. companies, Thwipster, Yo Books made a comment, and Craig Yo made a comment on another blog, so I'm assuming they have PKD Media, Monkey Pipe Studios, and when it comes to creators, Alice Cote, Eric Grissom, Steve Niles, who did 30 Days a Night, so it's awesome to see him do it, Brian J. Daggett, Craig Yo, Ed Brubaker, Sean Pryor, Jamie Gamble, and Dave Elliott are all people who have been speaking out against this. I wish the list was longer, but sadly not. And actually, to me, the biggest disappointment is so Thwipster did a post tweet about it, being like, why isn't there any coverage on the main blogs, out the big boys? And then they, of course, like Bleeding Cool made a blog post which really explained what was going on, but had no stance and like didn't really go into good depth. And that was it. And everyone else copied that kind of crap journalism. And I'm going to call it out for what it is, crap journalism. But to me, the biggest disappointment is none of the blogs actually took a stand. There was no, like...
Well, they're all tied to the big two, right? Or one of the big three, even.
Yeah, I mean, none of them want to stand up and fight for free speech and actually call crap crap. Like, this isn't a tough fight here. It's pretty clear this is horrible legislation, which is kind of the frustrating thing. So... Yeah.
People seem to look at imagine what would the world be like without Wikipedia? Do you understand what we're talking about? You know, Twitter could get put down if somebody posts something, a tweet, which is a violation of copyright law. They could then decide to take down Twitter itself.
Yep.
Like, that's the level of crazy we're talking about. We would not be able to function as we do.
Well, even this is like, a lot of the people that are in the comic book industry, the fans just like to draw their favorite characters. That could actually land you in jail. That alone is enough to land in jail. Like, DeviantArt would have to come down. DeviantArt, which is right now turning into a great talent place. I know tons of writers who go to DeviantArt to find new artists, wouldn't be able to do that anymore. Like, that site would be down. I did a query off of it of, like, how many posts had Spider-Man and Captain America and Iron Man and stuff like that, because Marvel is listed as one of the supporters, and we're talking, like, 100,000 hits for each one of those terms. So, all together, we're talking, like, 3,000, 500,000 posts just for four or five characters that are all copywritten. I don't see that service pulling all that down. Like, that entire website will have to shut down. So it's a bit frustrating that there's not more going on in the fans or the creators themselves who, you know, espouse about free speech and supporting it, but don't. Though, out of all of them, Marvel, when it comes to free speech, has been having some issues lately, so it does not shock me. I mean, they had the whole Brubaker with the Tea Party, where the Tea Party got pissed about those couple signs from, was it this year or last year that happened? But you know, the Tea Party got pissed off, complained, and Marvel collapsed and said, no, we'll change it for the next printing. And it's like, way to stand up for free speech. That's all you need to say is, like, you know what, we have a right to say this. You have a right to be angry. We're not changing anything. We believe in free speech. You should too. And that's the end of the argument. But no, they capitulated. Sigh.
Well, I wanted to, you know, thank you for doing so much work around this issue. It's been really a relief to see that somebody's putting this together and really trying to educate the fans. So thank you, Brett.
Well, actually, I have to throw some mad props to Thwipster on this. For them to stand up, they're actually standing behind their actual, like, everything they're saying is they have made a statement that while they are selling Marvel products right now, what they're selling was ordered months ago, and they have stopped ordering Marvel products. They will no longer be selling Marvel products as long as Marvel supports SOBA.
Damn. That's pretty clear.
That's pretty ballsy.
Clear, yeah.
That's gutsy, mm-hmm. And for a company that's selling material, that's a pretty – you got to throw mad props for them.
That really is.
And so far – I'm looking at 462 people have signed the petition, so I'd love to see this to get to 1,000 by the end of next week.
Come on, folks. Yeah.
So come on, sign it. It's Dear Marvel, it's not hard to find. And the other is we're going to have a lot more coming up, different ways for people to fight. And one of the great things was posted up by Thwitster was a history of Disney's corporate profits over the last decade. They have not lost money. Piracy might be rampant and increasing. They've been still gaining money. So the whole piracy hurts the bottom line is bullshit, people. Just look at the corporate profits. Disney's making a lot of money. They're quite good. So, yeah. I can go with so many reasons why this legislation's bad. Like, here's an interesting... This is one that most, actually, folks have missed and don't bring up. Is there is a clause in the legislation that says internet service providers can shut down and block access to websites that are deemed health risks. Health risk is not really defined.
No. It could be like unhealthy food even. I think it's unlikely, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. So you take
or things that are flashing and could be dangerous for those with epilepsy. I don't know. This is bizarre categories.
Yeah, well, I take the extreme is let's say you had a like extreme right internet service provider, and they didn't, you know, they wanted to block websites that had like abortion info or
any LGBT stuff at all.
Yeah, they could block it, and people who use that internet service provider have no say whatsoever in that and have no recourse to respond. There's the internet service providers are actually exempt from lawsuits. So as a client, as a customer, you're screwed. And most people only have one option when it comes to internet service providers in their area. So have fun with that, folks. Yeah. And rant from me. From you two, I mean, you're both political organizers. I mean, what would you suggest for folks to do?
Light the phones up.
Yeah.
That's the one that has the most impact for the least cost for the average, you know, person out there is to call those offices, and they'll, you know, they record it when it comes in, and if enough people are talking about it, it can have an impact. So.
And I guess this is one of the issues where the people who are making these decisions don't know what the hell they're talking about. And so, sure, like, yes, you have they are bought and sold by corporations, and, you know, Citizens United has made it, which is the legislation that says that, the Supreme Court ruling that says that money from companies is the same as free speech has completely poisoned everything even more. But even so, I think that there's such a strong financial incentive to not have this come to pass, because the industries of the future and technology will suffer so greatly from this, from SOPA being passed, that I do think that educating, you know, when you pick up the phone and you call your member of Congress, like, you should also explain to them why the bill is such bad stuff and why it's bad for this, why it's bad for the future of the internet, why it's bad for business, because they don't get it.
So yeah, and this is an interesting one. Is, you know, a lot of it I think is. Donations. I mean, $1.9 million or something like that's been spent to get this passed. God knows how much has been given when it comes to actual campaign contributions. I'm convinced part of this is Barack Obama trying to get in with Hollywood again, who feels that he hasn't done enough when it comes to piracy in his upcoming campaign. Where's the other side? I've kind of been wondering this the entire time, is where's the super PAC that's been formed that will say, anyone that votes for this, we will spend unlimited amount of money to take you down?
There really should be unlimited amount of money. We're talking about tech companies, right? Like,
yep.
They should really put their money where their mouth is on this. I don't know. I don't understand. I think it's not savvy enough to understand that that's what you need to do. I don't know.
Let's say I'm looking into it. I just don't get it. Like, everyone talks about donations and all that. It's like, where's the funneling of donations on the other side? Like, I understand we're all outspent and we can't necessarily, as individuals, you know, it'd be challenging to raise a couple million dollars.
Not if you were Google.
But yeah, but that's the thing, is you have these tech companies. You have Google, Facebook, all these folks that are worth God knows how much money that, you know, dropping $10 million, they wouldn't even think about it. I mean, I'm pretty sure Google, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and a few others, they've got probably got $10 million sitting in their couch.
Yeah, haven't they spent like $10 million on like slides for employees?
I think that is actually probably about right. I don't know. Like, we're fighting the fight. We're all fighting the fight. We're doing what we can. Hopefully the site will be around after that, because I think I'm about to go nuts on quite a few people, especially when it comes to Marvel. I mean, the three big ones that stand out that kind of have to do with entertainment, or at least are part of the entertainment world, Marvel's specifically listed, Disney's specifically listed, and Time Warner. I'm not willing to go as far as saying Time Warner means DC, because Time Warner also listed Time Warner Music. But DC is not listed separately, which I thought was weird. But, I mean, as far as an industry, I encourage people to, one, put pressure on the publishers, tweet to them, go to Dear Marvel, throw up tweets saying, where do you stand in SOPA, don't support SOPA.
Yeah.
Getting them to just state their stance is a first step. Most of these guys are, and I'll say it, are chicken shit to make it to actual stance. Because they think saying I'm against SOPA means they're pro-piracy, and that's crap. And then the other is encourage the other blogs. I mean, there is a handful of us. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 7 of us that are actually willing to speak up and fight this and dedicate commentary to this and airtime. But there is a dozen other blogs that put us all to shame when it comes to traffic that might actually make some difference. Bleeding Cool, CBR, Newsrama, Comic Vine, IGN, Publishers Weekly, Comics Alliance, DC Women's Kick Ass, Geek Week, MTV Geek, Mary Sue, Comics Beat. None of them have actually taken official stance on SOPA. Put the pressure on the other bloggers. Say these smaller blogs have all taken a stance. Why don't you?
And we really do know that the companies, and especially blogs, pay attention to what people are saying about them in social media. So
yep.
It does make a difference.
Absolutely. I mean, if you go to Dear Marvel, you can see the comments. Is a good chunk of them are, I intend to boycott Marvel. And, you know, when it comes to comics, when sales are so low and every dollar counts, you know, maybe Marvel will start figuring out that this actually hurts their brand and they pull their name. I mean, that to me is a victory. Marvel pulling their name from the list of supporting companies is a victory. So I think that's kind of the first goal. That's what I'm looking for, at least. I don't expect them to actually come out against it. They're owned by Disney. Disney's calling the shots. Just pulling their name is a good first stance. Or having creators come out and say, we don't support this.
Totally.
And I've posted up quite a few tweets trying to get them to say it. I think the highest profile, so other than Brubaker and Steve Niles, Kevin Smith posted up a couple, like retweeted a couple anti-SOPA stuff.
That's great.
I haven't officially gotten it. I've asked if he's against it, but I haven't gotten it back. So he's kind of in that gray area. I think he's against it. So... I'm going to give him props because he actually, you know, stands as an independent filmmaker. And he's actually kind of launching new ventures, which puts him on the line for money. It's a pretty gutsy stance to take when you're kind of starting out. So, you know, hopefully he actually doesn't support it. I'm crossing my fingers. Other than that, yeah, it's a long rant, but it's an important issue.
Well, you know, I just want to say it's great to be back again this year, and I'm really hoping we can keep this up and continue to have more guests and have more of our fans and listeners call in and have conversation. And
yes, call in, people. You were all tweeting the anti-SOPA stuff. Call in.
Great.
Join us.
So call in, too, yeah.
It's not that hard. The number, it's kind of wrapping down, so why give the number out about? But, yeah, it's great. Great hearing having you guys back, and... 2012, we'll see if we can go an entire year without missing a show. that's a huge undertaking to do, but I'm willing to make the dedication. Yeah, I mean, it's a little after 9 o'clock. We usually kind of start wrapping up. But anything else on your minds and you want to chat about, point out?
I think that's
hit on my big year ones.
Yeah, I guess I only would say that folks who haven't picked up, who haven't been reading Journey into Mystery really should, especially the Yule issue is one of the most wonderful holiday issues of anything I've ever seen. So
I'll second that.
All right, cool.
I normally don't like mythology-related stuff, and I'm not a big Thor and that grouping thing, but the Journey into Mystery stuff is really good. So.
And I promise this year I'll read more indies. I promise. You guys should make me a list of like what I should be reading that I'm not. So
we'll come up with a list. Well, you know, I'll start kicking out more of the books that we're getting for comps that we should be reviewing. There we have no excuse. We don't have to go to a store. We just have to download those things.
Yeah, just put it on the agenda for the next show, and then we have to read it, right?
There we go. No pressure. All right. Well, I mean, if there's nothing else, I guess that's it. We're going to wrap up for
the next week. Yeah.
Yeah, Sunday. And thanks to Ken and Alana. It's great to be back. And here's to 2012 and seeing what it has in store.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you.
And everyone can join us during the week at graphicpolicy.com. Thanks for listening. Until next week.
Until then. Bye.
Bye.